Performance artist, Peterson Toscano.
Joan Rivers, the comic, of course, who died not too long ago. I learned not too long ago she had her big break on the Johnny Carson show the very same day I was born. And so I wonder if there was some comic magic in the air. But she had this funny joke I remember as a kid. I may have been 9 or 10. She did lots of self-deprecating humor. And she would talk about how ugly she was, which was weird because she was beautiful. And she would say, you know, like, I was so ugly. And she would get out of breath when she would tell her, I was so ugly that when I was born, instead of slapping me, they slapped my mother.
We know it was her shtick. Joan Rivers would make fun of her looks and so much more about herself. Her biographer, Leslie Bennett, told Vogue in 2016 that to understand Joan Rivers, you have to understand the cultural norms in which she was raised, how the ethos of perfection reigned, and that women in particular were taught to have so little tolerance for what was seen as their own imperfections and those of others. But Bennett continues, "We are all flawed. Joan Rivers had huge flaws and huge strengths. She's a really great example of the fact that we have to embrace the whole package in ourselves and in others and not let outside forces try to determine who we are." Peterson Toscano was born into a family of natural storytellers where a sense of comedy came with the cannelloni and in an era when cultural norms undercut the chance for someone like this young Toscano to ease into being Peterson with all his strengths and talents and humanity. It was those gifts, though, that may have been suppressed but never eradicated, that have served him well in his self-doubting, his questioning, and questing, and eventually in his settling into being Peterson Toscano, performance artist, comedian, author, gay activist, theological scholar, and producer of a climate-related podcast. He told Lauren Smith of Yale University that he wasn't always so passionate about climate change, for example, but he came across an article that changed his life. "There was this one section that totally gripped my heart. It said, on a warmer planet where there's more drought, there will be more crop failure, including potentially failures of wheat production, leading to shortages of pasta." I was, well, like, wait, what? From love of pasta to climate activism. Now Toscano uses his comedy to engage others. He tells stories, writes plays, and gives talks that make links between climate change and human rights, faith, even his identity as a gay man. All thanks to his apostolips. That from Yale Climate Connections, September 2016. Comedy meets climate change, meeting his Italian heritage. And so it goes, with Peterson, a master storyteller who was surrounded by stories probably from the time he was slapped on the bum by his baby doctor. That's the way we introduced Peterson Toscano back in 2018. Since then, he's expanded his podcasting, spent time in South Africa. He's taken to working with young people in a big way to help them build their audio production skills to tell their own stories. This Saturday afternoon, April 27th, he'll be the featured performer in the Storyteller Art and Music Series at the Albright Center for the Arts in Sunbury. And in anticipation of his program titled Not Your Grandma's Bible Storytime, we had a chance to speak with him online about his passion for storytelling and more.
I was just back home in the Catskills, not far from Honesdale, Pennsylvania, but on the New York side, and somebody reminded me that on the school bus, on the way home, every day for about a year, I hosted the Peter Pumpkin Show, where I interviewed people and told weird stories. I barely remember it. I must have been in second grade.
It's as if it's in your system and that you didn't particularly remember, but a fellow student remembered, yeah?
Yeah, that's right. Actually, it was an older student. She was just so, like, you know, thought that little kids were boring. And then suddenly this another weird child came on the bus and was like, oh, this has changed. Things have changed.
And when were you first conscious of being a storyteller?
Oh, you know, I don't, that's a good question, because
to me, it was just such a natural thing to be telling stories that I didn't think it was anything out of the ordinary. Now, I do come from a family of storytellers. We're Italian-American, and, you know, there were always lots of stories. So it was just part of my DNA. But it may have been when I was a teen and I began getting more involved with my church. And that's when I started telling Bible stories. And maybe that's the first time I was really conscious of it.
Now, let's go back to the dinner table. And were there...
Things have changed.
And when were you first conscious of being a storyteller?
Oh, you know, I don't... that's a good question. Because to me, it was just such a natural thing to be telling stories that I didn't think it was anything out of the ordinary. Now, I do come from a family of storytellers. We're Italian-American, and, you know, there were always lots of stories. So it was just part of my DNA. But it may have been when I was a teen and I began getting more involved with my church. And that's when I started telling Bible stories. And maybe that's the first time I was really conscious of it.
Now, let's go back to the dinner table. And were there grandparents or older generations telling you stories when you were sitting around the dinner table?
Absolutely. My grandmother on my father's side was the only grandparent I had growing up. And she had so many stories about her children. She had six children, so lots of stories there. And she originally came from Italy. So she loved talking about back at home and the way they did things and people I never had the opportunity to meet, but I felt like I knew so well from the many ways that she introduced them to us. I think one thing that really stood out was this little sense of mischief that was often in these stories where they never made fun of anyone, but there was a playfulness that lightened the stories, even heavy stories.
And that's something we've talked about in the way you handle the telling of the climate stories and the climate issues that are facing us. You still like to use that light touch sometimes to make sure that people keep listening, right?
Absolutely. I was at Bloomsburg University recently for their Earth Day event, and half of the students there had to be there because they were required because of their class. That is not an easy audience to work with, especially with a topic like climate change, where people come in with fear and with shame and maybe even some resistance. So I had to use lots of comedy to weave in the things that I wanted to say. And, you know, it just makes it that much more engaging. And there is a way to use comedy on serious issues where you're funny, but you're not making light of the issue.
And if we go back to your church, we know that you had some real struggles in your growing up years in terms of who am I and I don't want to be who I am or I don't want to feel bad about it. And you really did go through a terrible grinding rejection of who Peterson's little Peter Pumpkin was.
It was like that for lots of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender people of that period. There was nothing but negative messaging going on. And it wasn't just from church. You know, you had politicians speaking out against us, as we're hearing a rise of something similar these days. But the church, too, there were really clear messages that were not coded in any way. They were very specific that the only pure, holy way to go was to be heterosexual. And if you weren't going to get married to a woman, then maybe become a priest if you're in the Catholic Church. But other than that, it was enforced. This heterosexuality was very much enforced. And the consequences of being gay at that time were so severe because, if you remember, this was the HIV/AIDS crisis. And at first, they didn't know what caused AIDS, but a lot of gay men were dying. So they called it GRID, the gay-related immune deficiency. So lots of forces felt like they conspired against me, and I totally wilted under all that pressure and decided, I guess I can't be gay. Nobody wants me to be gay, so I need to try to be straight. And that sent me on a ridiculous and dangerous odyssey to try to de-gay myself.
And you did try so much and so hard and so long, and it was all for naught.
Yes, and I try to redeem as much of it as I can. I mean, I definitely can say from that experience, it has made me much more empathetic towards other people, and especially towards women who, they were the first ones I saw hitting the glass ceiling in churches, or the glass stained window, as I like to think of it. And as someone who is not straight, who is trying to be straight, who is a bit femmy, the ministers wouldn't let me also be part of teaching and ministering. So I suddenly began to experience what it was like to be feminized, be seen as less than masculine. And I got to witness what misogyny and sexism looks like.
And yet, in your quest to come to terms with the big questions in life that we face about who we are, why we're here, and all of those things, you went on a path, but you wound up coming back and having a faith that you're comfortable with.
Yeah. And sometimes I think it'd be less complicated if I didn't, because it is complicated being gay and being Christian. But I am happy that I found a home with the Quakers, the Religious Society of Friends, and I'm a member of the Millville Friends Meeting in Millville, Pennsylvania. And so it was great to find a group of people who had a different way of looking at the world. It doesn't always feel like home. I still feel like I'm in exile, in that culturally it's very different from the evangelical churches where I attended as a young person. But it's a place where I know I'm welcomed, and my gifts and my callings are also welcomed. And that's super affirming.
And the Quaker tradition embraces the respect for the earth and concern for the climate.
Yeah, very much so. Going back, you know, hundreds of years to people like John Woolman, who, you know, spoke a lot about doing justice to the earth. And there have been long, long examples of this. So it was funny because I was never much of an environmentalist in all these years. I'm much more of a human rights, queer liberation kind of person. But as the years have gone on, I've become to recognize the threat of climate change towards the things and the people and places I love. And I'm becoming much more connected with that message with the Friends, the Quakers. There's a Quaker Earth Witness is a great organization that has really inspired me in lots of ways.
When we last spoke, you had a podcast, didn't you, about the climate, interviewing people who work in some way or other on these issues?
Yes, I was and still am the host of Citizens Climate Radio. And since that time, that premiered in 2017, we have 94 consecutive episodes. Every month we put out a new episode. But since then, I've worked with other groups to create podcasts for them as well, including a group in Maine called the BTS Center, which is looking at climate change as a moral and spiritual issue. And they're trying to help develop spiritual leadership for a climate changed world. So I helped them with their podcast, which is called Climate Changed. And I've branched out into other podcasts, including one called Quakers Today, which is a very short show. It's about 15 minutes every month, but it explores what modern Quakers are thinking and talking about to show some of the diversity among Quaker communities. And I also have my own personal podcast, which is called Bubble and Squeak. It is my playground where I get to experiment with new sounds, with new techniques. And probably the most exciting thing that's happened in the past 2 years is I've begun to work with lots of young people and mentoring them, training them in audio, podcast, and radio production. And right now I'm working with a group of 10 different young people all over the US, one in mainland China. And that's just really thrilling to be able to learn from them, get their fresh perspectives while also teaching them hard skills that they're going to be able to use in other places.
Is there a place where we can hear the results of their work or your work with them?
Absolutely. And now I insist, actually, anyone who hires me to do a podcast for them or their organization, I insist they pay an intern to work with me so that person can get experience. And so all of my podcasts, you'll hear their voices in them, in Citizens Climate Radio, in the upcoming season of Climate Changed, and in Quakers Today. I have a new co-host. So If you go to petersontoscano.com, you're going to find links to all of my shows.
And we get a chance perhaps to see what you're up to near your home turf, Sunbury, Sealands Grove, soon. Tell us what that event is.
It's so rare these days that I do live performance. That's what I used to do full-time before the pandemic. But even before the pandemic, I was trying to move away from that to spend more time at home in Sunbury, Pennsylvania, which I love. To me, it's just one of the most charming and interesting towns in the region. So one of my big efforts has been to promote Sunbury on my own and to join up with the Sunbury Revitalization Corporation. And they received grant money for storytelling series. They did one last year, and this year we're having more. And they cover all different types of topics. And I will be the storyteller for this next one on April 27th at 4 p.m. at the Albright Center in Sunbury. It's the Albright Center for the Arts on 450 Chestnut Street. And my presentation is called Not Your Grandma's Bible Storytelling Time.
What is it that would make you want to do face-to-face storytelling? The faces, the eyes lighting up?
It is. It is. And then there's an opportunity for deeper dialogue. You know this, doing radio, it can be lonely. I mean, it's great when people send in their comments, but often the people who have anything to say are people who have a complaint. That's who we often hear from the most. But there are loads of people who are listening to you right now who love you and love what you do. And if you're hearing my voice, think of sending a little note to Erica just to say how much you appreciate what she does, because it does get to be lonely work. And so that's when it's nice to get in public.
What kinds of things do you have up your sleeve, or have you not planned yet?
Well, we have to acknowledge that telling Bible stories is complicated often. People ask me, you're doing a Bible presentation. Is it family friendly? And then you have to say, well, is the Bible family friendly in every page, on every page and every chapter? No, there are stories that are not appropriate for children. They're just not. There's violence, there's sexual assault, there's, things that kids aren't prepared to listen to. I'm not going to do those stories for sure. I'm interested in the people in the stories. And this is why religious and non-religious people like my Bible stories. I was once invited to speak to the Atheist Society in London to tell Bible stories. And I was like, this seems strange. Why would you like this? But they liked how I look at the people in the stories. And what makes these stories so enduring is that they are filled with people that we recognize as our neighbors, our family members, ourselves. And so although they come from a very different world, a very different time and cultures, there's something still familiar about them. And I think that is the hallmark of these stories that endure, like in Homer and Shakespeare and the Bible, because they're familiar. One thing I'm going to do is pull back the curtain as a storyteller and reveal how I get some of the fresh ideas for the stories. And part of it is embodying the text, becoming the characters. So there'll be some live performance as become the characters, and there'll be opportunities for whoever wants to experience some of that and be part of a story. You don't have to. If you want to sit quietly in your seat and watch, that's great. But for other people, they can get engaged and become the characters, become parts of the story.
How often do we have a chance to do that? Maybe we might do that before a mirror at home, but probably not. And also, maybe the last time we talked, there was something about sandwiches and walking and sandwiches.
Sunbury has become such a foodie town. I was not here for much of the pandemic. I was living in South Africa with my husband, Glenn Retief. And when I came back and I saw all these amazing places that had opened up. But long term, it has been a really good foodie place for sandwiches. Some sandwich shops have been in business for over 60 years. So we've got the Sunbury Sandwich Shop and Marlin's. And, these are institutions, the Squeeze In, people know all over the world. So I went to Sunbury Revitalization. I said, we've got so many sandwich shops. What if we had a day to celebrate them and just call it the Sunbury Sandwich Stroll? And so on June 8th from 11 a.m. to 2, people will be able to purchase tickets in advance. And then you get to walk around on Market Street to about 20 different places, hand them a ticket, and they will give you a sample sandwich. And this year, there's going to be savory sandwiches, as always, and sweet sandwiches for those who have a sweet tooth. I encourage people to bring a cooler because last year I got through three sandwiches and was like, I can't, but I want. So I had a cooler and I took them home and we had it for dinner.
What a refreshing idea. And when you say 20, that's a number that you might say, well, maybe 10, but 20.
Right. 20, they don't go out of business. They just keep going. It's kind of stunning. And like amazing sandwiches, like incredible Cubano sandwiches. And one place, Marlins, they roast their own turkey every day. And Pop Snyder's, it's all super fresh, innovative, and they pull out all the stops. So you're going to get lots of great sandwiches. And it's such a festive atmosphere, people walking up and down Market Street, enjoying all this. And there's going to be live music and there'll be sidewalk sales. So June 8th, definitely get your tickets in advance from the Sunbury Revitalization, or just do a Google search for Sunbury Sandwich Stroll. You'll find it right away. Yes, I heard many stories. There were many times we were right by, a fire outside. It was the pandemic, so people weren't getting together in public spaces so much, but we got to be outside a lot. So there were long nights talking into the night, sharing stories. And strangely enough, my storytelling took me to a whole new platform, the platform of TikTok. I began sharing my experiences in South Africa on TikTok, mostly for myself, as having a little journal to go back to later on. It became a huge hit with the South Africans. I began learning Afrikaans and isiZulu and traveling different places. I now have over 97,000 followers, all South Africans for the most part. And that was a fun way of not only sharing stories, but hearing stories, because in TikTok, people will leave so many comments. And I got to meet people through that way and learned a lot about the country.
Did Glenn write a lot?
He did. Glenn writes for the Daily Maverick, which is probably the largest newspaper in South Africa. And he writes these thought pieces, experiential pieces. And he was very curious about what he didn't learn in school, about some of the original inhabitants, some of the history that was taught from a certain perspective during the time of apartheid. We traveled to many places and saw rock art that was just breathtaking, that maybe only a handful of people, have ever seen in modern times. He went to the sites of historic battles and towns where the first Zionist church was started. The Zionist church is a series of denominations that is the largest in Southern Africa. And it was this little town of Wakkerstroom where it all started. All of those are there at the Daily Maverick. Now he's actually trying something similar here in the U.S. and exploring stories that most of us don't know about indigenous people throughout North America. And now we've been traveling to various ancient sites around the country as he's working on essays about those places and those people.
Storyteller Peterson Toscano, writer, podcast producer and host, educator, biblical scholar, and so much more, speaking with us in anticipation of a program titled Not Your Grandma's Bible Storytime. It's free and open to the public, and it's part of the Storyteller Art and Music series hosted by Sunbury's Revitalization, Inc. It's this Saturday, that's tomorrow afternoon at 4, 450 Chestnut Street in Sunbury. And again, it's free, the Albright Center for the Arts. And we'll have a chance to experience not only his storytelling gifts, but as he suggested, he'll open it up for us. And if you'd like to take a chance to create a character, step into a character, he'll welcome you. And so that is tomorrow afternoon at 4 at the Albright Center for the Arts, 450 Chestnut Street in Sunbury. And it's Peterson Toscano, and you'll have a chance to experience Not Your Grandma's Bible Story Time, a fresh take on age-old stories. We also heard about the stroll in Sunbury with sandwiches at the heart. It's the Sunbury Sandwich Stroll, Saturday, June 8th, hosted again by Sunbury's Revitalization, Inc., and 11 to 2, you can choose from sandwiches offered by 20 different establishments. And for more information about that, you can check the website of sunburyrevitalization.org, sunburyrevitalization.org, and you can also learn there about tomorrow's event at the Albright Center at 4:00.